Hi and welcome back to my fifth of these gramophone shows. Apparently over 100 of you are listening to them, and please do tell your friends, as you know it's free. If you go to the main site where this is posted, which is erlokin.blogspot.com, you can also, I believe, comment and write letters to me there. Do feel free to make requests. So far, only one of you has had the temerity to do so, and that is my new friend in New Zealand, who is called Andre Mendes da Costa. This is his second request, and this time, first time it was Artie Shaw. This is very different. This time he's asked to hear two different tenors, who, it turns out, actually knew one another. I don't think he realised that, and actually went on tour together. But I'm jumping the gun, as always. This is Richard Tauber. He was born in 1891 and died in 1948 of lung cancer, and he was singing, I think in Don Giovanni it was, at Covent Garden in London within weeks of his death. He wanted once more to sing with the Vienna State Opera, which was touring England, and he managed to do so. Not just that he managed to do so, but there's a recording of it. It's magnificent. Yet, he only had one lung to sing on by that time. He was born in 1891 of parents who were both, as it were, in the acting business, but they hadn't married. Shock, horror. His father had been Jewish, and his name was Richard Tauber as well, but he'd converted to Catholicism, and he wanted his son to become a priest. That wasn't going to happen because he wanted, from the beginning, to go on stage. But, in fact, at first he went to music school to study things like conducting and so forth, which stood him in good stead later on, as he was to discover. But he wanted to sing. They weren't impressed with his voice at first because he tried to sing Wagner, and his voice wasn't a Wagner's voice, which I'm delighted about because I don't like Wagner's music very much. He was a superb singer of Mozart, of Schubert, German folk songs, and later on became world famous for singing the operettas of Franz Lehár. Franz Lehár actually pretty much adopted him as a sort of nominal son. He wrote all his stuff for Tauber to sing. And indeed, that's what I'm going to play you today, because although I could have chosen all sorts of esoteric and rare tracks, I have a lot of Richard Tauber here. This program is not supposed to be for inveterate record collectors, it's for just people who love music, and they may not have heard this famous record of his. I'm going to play the song which possibly made him more famous than anything else. In English, You Are My Heart's Delight. In German, my German is up to it, Dein ist mein ganzes Herz. And this was recorded in the late 20s, and it's one of those seminal, iconic tracks that defines the 1920s. In the 30s, he had to run away from the Nazis and ended up living in England, but this was still, I believe, recorded in Berlin, and it's, well, magnificent. Richard Tauber there in October 1929 with an orchestra actually conducted by the composer of that song, Franz Lehár himself. I think it's Franz Lehár. I think it's the accent on the second syllable. He had a wonderful velvety baritonal sound to his tenor voice. Nobody sounds like Richard Tauber. He's instantly recognizable. He was not a big top C specialist. He may not even have had one. And quite often his top notes are sung in head voice or mezza voce. And, you know, it doesn't matter. It's not an Olympics. It's not who can sing the highest or the loudest. It's who can sing the best. And that's true whatever genre you're performing in. He was unique. Caruso himself, who he worshipped, couldn't have sung like that. Indeed, Richard Tauber shared a flat when he was a student with another great tenor, Tino Patiera, big, wonderful, rich-voiced, heroic tenor. They both hero-worshipped Caruso, but they became great singers, each in his own genre themselves later on. The next people you're going to hear, however, were equally great in their own form of music. These were three sisters who hailed from New Orleans, who really got well known when they moved to New York around 1930, and what they did was to take jazz songs of the time, harmonize them, and do so in such a way that the rhythm really was accentuated and that, in other words, they were singing jazz, not just popular songs of the day. They must have appealed to all the musicians who met them, which isn't always true with jazz singers. And they impressed the Dorsey Brothers Orchestra enough that they often were the accompanying band on their records. I'm told that some of the arrangements were written by another up-and-coming young trombone player called Glenn Miller. I don't know if that's true, but if it is, it's interesting, because this is about a decade before he had his own band. Their tracks simply swing like the Clappers, in a way that records by the Andrews Sisters never quite did. These are the gold standard. Now, the leader of the group, who was Connie Boswell, had either suffered from polio as a girl or possibly had been involved in an accident, but either way, she couldn't walk, and you always see her in films sitting on a piano, on a couch, anywhere to disguise the fact that she couldn't stand up. Nevertheless, hers is one of the definitive voices, and it is the deep voice sound of this New Orleans white singer which fed the dreams of a youngster just starting off who was black, and her name, of course, was Ella Fitzgerald. Ella always hero worshipped Connie Boswell, so if that's what you inspire, the chances are you're pretty good yourself, and Connie Boswell was, well, she was the best. This track that I've chosen for you is one of the best that the Boswell sisters turned out in the early 30s. They are indeed accompanied by the Dorsey Brothers Orchestra. It swings up the Clappers, as I say, and it's called When I Take My Sugar to Tea.
I'm just a little Jackie Horner,
and I met my sugar cane. A gang of mine has been revealing that they're feeling sore.
I left the lamplight on that old corner,
saw the moon in Lover's Lane. I'm doing things I never did before.
Take my sugar to tea. All the boys are jealous of me, 'cause I never take her where the gang goes when I take my sugar to tea. I'm a rowdy, dowdy, that's me. She's a high hat baby, that's she. So I never take her where the gang goes when I take my sugar to tea. Every Sunday afternoon, we forget about our cares, rubbing elbows at the wrist with those millionaires. When I take my sugar to tea, I'm as rizzy there as I can be, 'cause I never take her where the gang goes when I take my sugar to tea.
Mm-hmm. sugar dootie. I'm a rowdy dowdy, that's me. She's a high hat baby, that's she. So I never take her where the gang goes when I take my sugar dootie.
The Boswell sisters back then in 1931, I don't think there's ever been three singers who sing in harmony like that that have equaled the Boswell sisters. In England we had the Beverley sisters in the 50s, but they weren't doing the same sort of thing, so it really isn't a comparison. Anyhow, something is interesting. I've been looking on the web while I've been doing this, and Richard Tauber singing that very song, Deines mein ganzes Herz, and the Boswell sisters, and indeed my next artist, are all visible. You can actually watch them moving and singing and performing on YouTube. So when you've got their name in your head, do have a look at them. It's great to actually see them performing rather than listening to them alone, which is already good, but this is even better if you can listen to them and see them. So have a look on YouTube for all the people I've played so far. Now here's something interesting too. It always surprises me, as if I didn't know already, to think of these very disparate performers all living and working at the same time. One forgets that. One divides people into categories. In 1929, Richard Tauber was recording that in Berlin. At the same time, the Boswell sisters were recording in New York. And meanwhile in England, an older woman, although she was still in her prime in the 20s, in fact that was probably the height of her career, was doing music hall, variety, whatever you want to call it. And here's another strange coincidence, this time with names. Connie Boswell, when she went solo, made some of her best recordings partnering Bing Crosby, and I may play one of those tracks at some later date. Bing was born with the name Harry Lillis Crosby. That was his name. The lady I'm about to talk about was born in England long before him in 1882, and she lived till 1952. And she was born with the name Lillis, L-I-L-L-E-S, Mary Crosby, which is a strange coincidence. But she was known to all her adoring public in Great Britain over a long career as Lily Morris. She's quite unique. There are videos of her up on YouTube which I highly recommend, especially the one which is called The Old Apple Tree. You must watch her do that song. In fact, the recording of it is somewhat disappointing because she has to sort of squeeze it all into 3 minutes, and that means she's singing a little bit too fast. However, Lily Morris, who was the purveyor of comic songs like nobody else, she acts them all out. Her comic personas are wonderful. She's, again, a one-off. She was a star of musical and variety. She didn't matter how old she got, she was just as good. If you're good, you're good. You're good if you're 95, provided you're fit enough to still do what you do. And she went on to appear in films. She was in Arthur Askey comedies. She was in Elstree Calling, which was incidentally co-directed by Alfred Hitchcock when he was still learning his craft. She was in Radio Parade of 1935, and she often played all sorts of characters, sometimes very posh, sometimes working class, but she was always convincing, and again, there's nobody like her. I'm going to play one of my favourites of her tracks. This one is it's got an interesting lyric. She is making fun of men, and she basically says, you know, I go out to work, I do all the lazies around in bed, but she disguises that as if, oh, she feels so sorry for this poor working man. It's very ironic. Women must have loved it at the time, and it must have made the men feel rather embarrassed. So in a funny sort of way, although she doesn't pretend to be such, she was a sort of an early women's liber in this song. It's very funny, it's beautifully performed, and it is just, well, it's Lily Morris, and that's it.
Each of them will plead. Now as they always would be blessed. Do the same as I do, and you'll never ever row. Believe me, my old man's one of the best. I wake him every morning when the clock strikes eight. I'm always punctual, never, never late, with a nice cup of tea and a little round a toast. The sporting life and the winning post. I make him nice and cozy, then I toddle on to work. I do the best I can, for I'm only doing what a woman should do, 'cause he's only a working man. I hurry home each day and cook the dinner and give it to him nice and hot in bed. It's nice to know when to work I go. He's always thinking of me, so he says. He lies in bed so patiently till I come home to tea. I wouldn't have him vexed at any cost. And if he backs a loser, never says an angry word, 'cause I give him back the money that he's lost. I wake him every morning when the clock strikes eight. I'm always punctual, never, never late, with a nice cup of tea and a little round a toast. The sporting life and the winning post. I make him nice and cozy, then I toddle off to work. I do the best I can, for I'm only doing what a woman should do, 'cause he's only a working.
The wonderful Lily Morris. My late father often told me that when he was growing up, she was his favourite act at the local music hall where he used to go quite often. And I can only agree with him. He was right. You know, there's a lot of people these days who try and sound like somebody else who's famous, you know, the best Elvis Presley or the best Frank Sinatra imitation. The people who you really remember are the ones who are themselves, who are one-offs. There's never been a Lily Morris. Nobody can approach what she did in her way, on her terms, in her form of entertainment. Genuinely, for once, we can use the word legendary. As we can about the next person, but very, very different. So far, I've said several times that you can watch these people on YouTube. Now, you wouldn't think that you could also watch somebody who was born in 1860. But indeed you can. Ignacy Jan Paderewski was an amazing man. He was born in a little village in Poland, and after a young life that was not exactly free of stress, tragic happenings, he lost a child, for instance. He, before long, at the age of, in his early 20s, he just created furore everywhere he played, because this was one of the great pianists. And Paderewski, the name Paderewski, almost became, for the man of the street, a word synonymous with the idea of the greatest of piano players, virtuosity and the lot. It's interesting when I hear him play, all of those pianists in those days tended to think of playing the piano, I think, roughly the way that a singer thinks when he performs music. Nowadays it's all about technique, and you have to go to schools which tell you the right way to play and this, that and the other. Again, in those days, people were much more intent upon being individuals in the way they played, and they would phrase and interpret music as themselves. At least that's the way I read it. The track I'm about to play almost led to me wanting to be a piano player, because it was wonderful. In fact, I was determined to play this piece of music. It's the only piece of music I've ever managed to read from the dots and learn, and I did that when I was 8. I suppose I had less things to worry about in those days and could spend the time in doing it, and probably my memory was better. To this day, I can just about play this piece of music on the piano, but not like Paderewski. I've read comments about the way he plays left hand before right slightly. This is regarded as terrible practice these days, but according to whom? Just according to modern fashion. For all we know, Beethoven, who wrote this piece of music, might have played it like that himself. We don't know. I know for sure that you can never write down in dots precisely the way you want something played. So there's always going to be that element of interpretation, the way you think it ought to be played. Unless, of course, you have a recording of the composer himself playing it. And even then, I've known instances of composers saying somebody else played it better. So here we have the famous Moonlight Sonata, the first slow movement, played in an amazingly wonderful way by Ignacy Jan Paderewski. I understand that he wasn't very happy with recording long pieces for the gramophone, because in those days you had to keep stopping every 4 minutes or so because of the length, the maximum length of a 78, and which is why the majority of his recordings are of short pieces that come under that barrier. However, he did record all of this sonata. There's only one break in it, and that's halfway through the third movement, which was just too long to get on one side. However, this side is 5.5 minutes long, just about the absolute maximum that you could squeeze onto one side of a 78, and obviously they must have agreed with him that he'd be able to play this movement all the way through, which is why we have it. This recording was made in 1937. This means he was, at that time, almost 77 years old. There's no diminution of his power or his talent. It's a wonderful, definitive recording of this piece, and I've yet to hear anybody who plays it better. Paderewski playing the first movement of Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata. the great Paderewski playing the first movement of Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata. I've just been talking about his piano playing because that's, of course, what he's best known for. He was also a composer. He wrote several wonderful piano pieces which make you think that he was, in a sense, the person who took over the mantle of Chopin. Such was the quality of his pieces. He also wrote a complete opera, Manru, which was premiered in Dresden and was even performed at the Metropolitan Opera in New York. I think the only Polish opera ever to be performed there. And then there was his political career. This is sort of almost something on the side, one might say. Somewhere around the end of World War I, being, well, like a lot of Poles, very patriotic, he got involved with a movement for Polish independence, ended up in 1919, the Prime Minister and Minister of Foreign Affairs to boot. For the whole of 1919, he was the Prime Minister, as you do. And he was the person who signed the Treaty of Versailles for Poland, and he got involved in all sorts of things. And then, 3 years later, he decided to retire from politics and go back to music. Nice if you can do that sort of thing. Incidentally, he married into the upper classes. He married a baroness or something. And there's on YouTube, there's a little bit of home film of him in his amazingly wonderful, massive house in Switzerland, I think it was. So you can see he lived the life of old Riley towards the end of his life, and he was a legend, and well, he lived like one. He was even knighted by George V. He couldn't be called Sir because he wasn't British, but he was genuinely a knight of the Grand Cross of whatever it is of Great Britain. Anyhow, from Paderewski to somebody in the Monty Python cliche, now for something completely different. Jean Sablon was most famous in the interwar period, and was, I suppose, the French equivalent of Bing Crosby. He was certainly the Frenchman that epitomized the sexy Frenchman that all women drooled over, with a very sort of swish moustache. He just epitomized everything that a Frenchman was supposed to be. A sort of insouciant way of singing, almost off the cuff, as if talking. This is one of my favorite tracks of his, made in, I think, 1936. And incidentally, accompanied by the wonderful Django Reinhardt.
Pourquoi m'avoir donné rendez-vous sous la pluie, petite aux yeux si doux, trésor que j'aime. Tout seul comme un idiot, j'attends et je m'ennuie, et je me pose aussi quelques problèmes. Pourtant on s'est connu par une claire nuit, le ciel était si doux, la mer si belle. Mais voilà ce soir, j'ai froid et je m'ennuie. Pourquoi m'avoir donné rendez-vous sous la pluie? J'ai mes chaussettes qui font trempette, j'ai des frissons de la tête aux talons, et dans la brume, j'attrape un rhume. Combien de garçons sont-ils morts de cette façon? Mais pourquoi? Mais pourquoi? Nino, pourquoi m'avoir donné rendez-vous sous la pluie, petite aux yeux si doux, trésor que j'aime, tout seul comme un idiot. J'attends là et je m'ennuie, et je me pose aussi quelques problèmes. Pourtant on s'est connu par une claire nuit, dans tout le casino c'était la fête. Pourquoi m'avoir dit oui tout en baissant la tête? Pourquoi m'avoir donné rendez-vous sous la pluie?
Jean Sablon, and not 1936, but I wasn't very far out, the 7th of December, 1935. The song was called Pourquoi m'avez donné rendez-vous sous la pluie. For those of you who don't speak French, yeah, the lyric is quite funny. He's made a date with a girl in the rain and she hasn't turned up, and he's saying, you know, boy could come to harm like this, you could get the flu, and how many boys have died in this sort of weather, and it's actually quite funny. However, I did promise, did I not, that I was going to return to another tenor, my other request. Before I do so, it's interesting, all the 78s that I've played this time have been recorded pretty much within the same decade, and yet tremendous range of different music was recorded at that time, from classical to opera to music hall to French popular song, and we're back to opera again. Josef Schmidt was born in 1904 in one of those parts of Eastern Europe that doesn't really seem to belong to any particular country. Apparently the name of the place was Davidina, and it was once part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, and then in Romania, and now it's part of Ukraine apparently. And he was brought up as a Jew. His first language was apparently Yiddish. He learned Hebrew because he was trained to be a chazan, that is the singing priest in a synagogue, which is a special sort of vocal technique required for that, which is similar but different to what you need to sing opera. He, because of his sort of international base, he became fluent in several languages such as Romanian, German, French, and indeed English. By the time he was 24, 25, he was in Berlin and was hired to sing the role of Vasco da Gama on the radio in Meyerbeer's opera L'Africaine. He didn't get many offers of work on stage, and the reason for this was that he was hardly 5 foot tall. All right, in the time of Nelson, people were that height. Even in World War I, there were lots of soldiers that were tiny. But by 1930, if you wanted to play heroic roles on stage, you had to be a bit taller than that. Despite this, he had a tremendous career because his voice was wonderful, and he sang German popular songs, and he was well known all over Germany despite the rise of the Nazis and his being Jewish. He sang operatic arias. He was in films where they obviously had to find rather small leading ladies to work with him. And he really was a famous, successful singer all through the 30s. Towards the end, of course, the Nazis stopped him being able to perform in Germany or Austria, and he was restricted to, occasionally America, but usually England, Holland, and Belgium a great deal. I know because I had a cousin who used to have him eat at her restaurant, said what a lovely man he was. And then finally, towards the end of the 30s, he was in France when he was caught and had to escape and made for America, but only got as far as Switzerland, where he was put into a Swiss refugee camp near Zurich. And unfortunately, his health was already failing due to the stress and all the other things he had to put up with, and the camp life and pretty much lack of proper medical care meant that he went down and down and down, and finally he had a heart attack, and he was only 38 years old. He had a wonderful voice, and when at the height of his powers, he often toured alongside the very Richard Tauber who started this program today. Tauber quite enjoyed not singing occasionally and acting as conductor, and on a couple of tours, I think, he was Schmidt's conductor, and they got on very well together. Schmidt had a very fine voice, and being a small man, maybe that was the reason he could get up to really high notes. He had a high D, I believe, let alone a C. And he sang in a very musical way. He didn't just belt. He understood phrasing, dynamics. He had a coloratura technique from being trained as a chazan. And, well, I'm going to play something special. I have in past programs played Jussi Björling's version of the aria that everybody knows these days, Nessun Dorma. However, his version, recorded at Abbey Road in 1934, is, as far as I'm concerned, the finest version that exists. And so, without more ado, I give you Nessun Dorma, sung by the wonderful Josef Schmidt.
Pura principesa,
Josef Schmidt, and for me that's the way that aria should be sung. It starts off tender, it builds, his phrasing is just wonderful, and then you lead up to this great top note at the end, which is all the more effective because of the gentleness with which he sang the beginning of the aria. I think it's just the definitive recording. Now, a couple more things that connect Josef Schmidt and Richard Tauber. That last recording was made for Parlophone, but his earlier recordings were made on a smaller German label, which had obviously got some connection with one of the smaller English labels, because you will find his early records released on one of the sort of cheap labels that was bobbing about around 1930. Somebody must have listened to him and heard him singing in German, as many of his discs are, and thought that they could somehow connect him with Richard Tauber, who was 13 years older than him and thus already more popular and known. And they must have thought that his voice sounded a little similar to Tauber's. I can't hear any similarity at all myself, but somebody must have thought so, because you will find on certain issues of his records in England the name Richard Bauter, which is Tauber, but with the two letters switched around. So instead of T-A-U-B-E-R, it's B-A-U-T-E-R. And if you see that, it's Josef Schmidt. Anyhow, enough of those. We're coming to the end of another program. And this is the bit where I'm supposed to play you one of my songs. And I thought I'd get a bit radical this time, because I've been playing you lots of old types of music. But although I grew up listening to this stuff, when I first started singing, it was really as a pop singer in the 60s. Pop, rock, whatever you want to call it. I've lost track of what the different pigeonholes mean these days. So I thought I'd send you off with a track of me singing one of my own rock songs. This one was on a recently finished CD called Songs from a Garden Shed. Before I play that, just want to say thank you for listening once more. Please do send the link to all your friends if you think anybody you know would like this stuff. Naturally, I want to take over the world. 100 is a good starting point, but it would be nicer if it were thousands. And I could be sort of an invisible, famous person who has a quirky radio show on the internet. They always tell you can do things on your own these days, so let's see if you can help me do it. That I have tons and tons more stuff. We haven't scratched the surface yet. So do subscribe, tell your friends to subscribe, and send me your comments, send me your requests, and I'll do my best to accommodate you if I possibly can. That's it for now, however. All I have to do is to give you that link once more, which is Erlokin, that's E-A-R-L-O-K-I-N, .blogspot.com. Simple as that, erlokin.blogspot.com. And here is one of my songs, which is called I'm a Singer, which I am. Ciao.
I seem a peaceable man, but deep inside I'm a singer. Don't say what I don't mean, I only bide my time. I'm part of nobody's plan, I take control, I'm a singer. And when the moment's right, I'll make you mine. Don't need no fancy talking, I know the game too well. I never play to lose, I don't need lies. Don't need no moonlight walking, I simply my spell. So when the moment comes, look in my eyes. nothing yet. I may seem quiet as a lamb, but don't be fooled, I'm a singer. I turn birds from the trees, whatever time I choose. I always know who I am, and who I am is a singer. I'll make you jump for joy, I'll make you sing the blues. Don't need no fancy talking, I know the game too well. I never play to lose, I don't need lies. Don't need no moonlight walking, I simply weave my spell. So when the moment comes, look in my eyes. I'm a singer, singer. Know me through my song. Remember what you hear is what you get. I'm a singer, singer, and my voice is strong. Don't try to understand, you ain't heard nothing yet. You ain't heard nothing yet.